Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
So, Toni Morrison, Nobel Prize winner, one of the greatest American writers of this century, in my opinion, passed away recently. And I just wanted to honor her just briefly. We sold out of every single one of her books this week. It's an amazing story that three of her books wound back up on the New York Times paperback bestseller lists. She's a woman with an amazing intellect who I think wrote about the experience of African Americans in this country in a way that could pierce the heart of white people. I know she did that to me. Beloved is my favorite book of hers, and I think that book made me have some tiny inkling of what it might have been like to be a slave in this country. And I don't know what higher praise I could give to her than to say that she could get inside the head of a white middle-class woman and help me to understand the issue of race in this country. I did just pick up her collection that came out this year, The Source of Self-Regard, Selected Essays, Speeches, and Meditations, and just dipping into it, it's like sitting down with the smartest person you ever met who's trying to help you understand what literature is and how it works. Anybody who's interested in writing, I think, would enjoy this collection a lot. Interestingly, in the UK, it is called A Mouthful of Blood, which is a quote from one of her essays that's in it that refers to putting bridles into the mouths of slaves who had misbehaved. So, Toni Morrison, we are so sorry you're gone, but thank you for being the great writer that you were.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So on that note, let's talk about things that we're currently reading, things we just finished, books we're excited about.
So I just finished The Surgeon on Libro FM. That is the first in the Rosolian Isles series. It is a murder mystery about a gentleman who attempts to kill a trauma surgeon back in Alabama. They catch him and he is arrested. She's kind of like the one that got away. She moves up to Boston, and then all of a sudden another person they think is a copycat killer is trying to kill her. So I'm listening to that on Libro FM. I am also reading Jaron Lanier's You Are Not a Gadget, a manifesto. That is a nonfiction book about how data and the sources of the internet are accumulating all of your information and how we can find humanity in the world of technology and IT. When it first came out in 2009, he predicted a lot of things that were happening that are happening now today. He just finished writing 10 arguments for deleting your social media accounts right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was excellent. That was a staff pick. He's such a great writer. Sometimes he can be a little heavy with what he talks about. It's very much a philosophy and technology book. But I really like it, and it's really enjoyable, and I love having the discussions and conversations with friends about how humanity can come back into the world and what we are missing, especially in today's kind of, we are all living in our own bubble with the social media and whatnot. So, other book I'm reading, it's called Savage Appetites, Four True Stories of Women, Crime, and Obsession by Rachel Monroe. It is a wonderful, brilliantly written book. Rachel Monroe tries to link four archetypes. So the first thing she talks about is a retrospective of Miss Frances Glessner Lee's work. She is a woman who, back in the 40s and 50s, helped the FBI and other police.
She was an extremely wealthy woman who took her money and used it to start the first forensic science department at Harvard University. And
Okay.
She's great.
She was born in the late 1800s, and her parents wouldn't let her go to college. She wanted to be a doctor, but instead she had to get married. And she was bored and rich, and she began making miniatures, you know, like little dollhouse kind of things. And then she began to become very interested in crime because she had a family friend who was the
Boston's medical examiner.
Mm-hmm. And so she got together with him. He gave her scenarios of different crimes, and she made miniatures of the crimes, and she called them nutshells. And they were used as teaching tools. Mm-hmm. So if you were a police officer, you could come and look at these things, and you would try to figure out what had happened.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a very early way of training people to be detectives. She was an amazing woman, a real powerhouse, and she has a New Hampshire link. She and her family had a house called The Rocks that is in Bethlehem, New Hampshire. You can still go there, and she made many of these in New Hampshire, and she was made an honorary captain of the New Hampshire State Police.
That's great.
Cool. So she's the first one.
Yep. The second one is a woman who befriends Sharon Tate's family.
Whoa.
She started to live in on CeeLo Drive, which is where Sharon Tate had been murdered by the members of the Manson family.
Yeah.
She became obsessed with, after she moved into the pool house on the property, she became obsessed with figuring out what had happened, because mm-hmm. she's living on where the place, like a few feet away where
it all went down.
Yep. And she starts befriending the family of Sharon Tate, and she just becomes good friends with the daughters. She finds photos of Sharon Tate weeks before she was murdered in a box of a former detective's home, and she was like, this isn't right. He should not be keeping these for whatever reason. These should go back to the family. And she delivered it back to Sharon Tate's family, and they just became friends.
She was very stalky.
Yes.
And she became romantically involved with, for many years, one of the daughters, one of Sharon Tate's sisters, who ultimately died. But the rest of the family thinks that she's the psycho and that she has kind of inserted herself into their story. And But the other part of that section that's really important is it tells how Sharon Tate's mother, Doris, started the victims' rights movement and how it completely changed the way victims are treated in this country. So it's a very important aspect of that.
The third person she interviews or she talks about is the woman who married Damien Echols, who was one of the people who were wrongfully accused of the West Memphis Three.
Of murdering the kids.
Yeah.
And then the fourth person, I can't remember the name of the young woman, but they talk about the post-Columbine on Tumblr. They had a lot of fan websites.
Yes.
And this woman had become obsessed with the boys who did the Columbine shootings, and then she started trying to orchestrate her own mass shooting herself.
With a boy she met online.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
And so the overarching reason why Rachel wrote about this is because there's a lot of women who are into true crime and the true crime genre. And she was wondering why a lot of women are really into true crime. So with information about all of these folks that she writes about, interviews that she's done with them and whatnot, she tries to parse out why women are into true crime. And she also puts a little antecedent of, like, how she became obsessed with true crime as well. And it's just a really well-written book.
It's one of those great nonfiction books that manages to incorporate huge amount of research. It's the kind of book that's going to send you looking for other books.
Cool.
And I actually am somebody who listens to a lot of true crime podcasts. I read true crime. And I didn't used to, and it was really the election of Donald Trump that set me down this path, and I think it's something she examines in this book, is that women respond to trouble in life by diving into something that's even more troubling.
Yeah. There's another thing that she comes up with, too, where when she was a teenager in her hometown, a girl went missing. And then she started to become obsessed with looking up her MySpace page and whatnot. And I feel like what she was trying to get at was, she said in her book, like, she was my age and where she was taken was exactly the place I would have been when I was 17 and at night. And it's kind of like victim adjacent. This could have been me.
Yeah.
So she just talks about how people get into the genre. It's fascinating, you know. It's really not very long.
It's a fast read, and if you're into true crime, especially if you're a woman, Get Savage Appetites by Rachel Munro. Mm-hmm. It is an excellent book, and it's on the shelves now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome.
So that's what I'm reading.
Go cool.
Ahead. What am I reading? Well, besides The Source of Self-Regard, there's a new book that's coming out, I believe, next week that is by Anne Cleves, who a lot of people may know for her mysteries that take place in Shetland. Mm. And then she has a series that's about a woman named Vera, and they have been turned into television shows, so I think a lot of people know her from these. But she has a new mystery series coming out that has just begun. It's sited in North Devon in England, and the main character is Detective Matthew Venn, who is a gay man with a husband. Mm. So there's a whole new sort of twist on how do you navigate as a detective when other people are maybe looking at you aslant for your sexuality.
Yeah.
The first book is excellent. It involves sort of religious cult and the murder of a homeless man. And I don't need to tell you any more than that. I just, for fans of Anne Cleves or anybody who likes series, you can get in on this one now. It's just beginning, and I believe the book comes out next Tuesday.
Awesome.
So that's me.
Cool. I'm reading a million and five things, but I'm only going to talk about a couple.
We all are, don't worry.
Oh, I just started a book that comes highly recommended from several of my coworkers. Kelso read this one. Elizabeth read this one. This is her copy. It is called Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. I just started it, but I can already tell that I'm going to love it. It's one of those books where when the publisher markets it as Harry Potter for adults, it's actually true this time.
Yeah.
Because the main character is a woman, she's like a PI, mm-hmm. and her sister was basically, you know, picked to go to Hogwarts, except it's not Hogwarts, but her sister is a magic person, and she is a non-magic person, and so she grew up super jaded because her sister is off at this magical school, and she's at home just getting more and more bitter, and she hasn't spoken to her sister in years, she doesn't really talk to her family. The headmaster from the magic school shows up and is like, we need you to help us solve a murder mystery because you understand our world, but you also have an outside eye. Mm-hmm. She's like,
I need to read
this. It's awesome. Yeah, I'm like two chapters in and I'm already hooked. I'm very, very excited for that. So yeah, that's called Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. It's out now. It is a staff pick, so it's 20% off. So definitely pick that one up if you are bitter that your Hogwarts letter got lost in the mail. The other one is called The Plus One by Sarah Archer. It is a very cute, very light romance. It's about a robotics engineer who is having trouble in the dating world, and she has a family who has very, very, very high expectations, and her sister is getting married, and everything has to be perfect down to this main character's date. And of course, she doesn't have a date. And her family's like, okay, but we need to set you up with someone. You have to have a date. You're the sister of the bride. And they set her up on a blind date, and it's horrible. And she goes home, and she builds herself a boyfriend. And it's so funny. It's a little bit cheesy, but in a really good way. It is just kind of one of those silly little books that's just a fun read. You have to suspend your disbelief that A, she could build a realistic robot in a weekend that passes for human, and the technology is just a little past where we are right now, but it's really fun. And then I am listening to, and I'm almost done, finally, with It, Stephen King. I've been reading this book for, how old is my daughter? Two? I've been reading this book for 2 years. I finally downloaded it on Libro.fm because the sequel, the movie, is coming out on September 6th. And I need to finish the book before then. The narrator is fantastic. His Pennywise is awesome.
I listened to it too.
His stuttering Bill is really good. All the characters are fantastic. And, you know, it's it. It's really, really good.
So today our topic is going to be about short stories. If a novel is a long and beautiful marriage, then the short story is a brief and powerful affair. They are snapshots in time. They are punches to the gut. I love short stories. What have you guys got for me for short stories that you like?
Oh, man. I have some of my favorites here. I have a couple of different Stephen King collections of short stories, which is, I guess, fitting since I'm reading it. I like Stephen King's short stories because you get in and out and you get that like little bit of scare, or sometimes his are nostalgic, or you know, he can evoke different emotions.
I just remember the plots of all of his short stories that I've right. read, which is kind of amazing because I've read so many short stories that I barely remember at all.
Right.
So like in this one there is The Body, which was turned into Stand
yes.
By Me, an amazing movie.
Mm-hmm.
Does this one have the one about the guy who's shooting people?
I can't remember if it's in that one.
Because that story is hair-raising now because he wrote it in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it's about something that's happening right now where people are going out and shooting as many people as they possibly can.
Right.
And it's basically sort of a white supremacist interior.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And this one also has Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank
yes.
Redemption.
Which yes.
turned Shawshank Redemption.
I think that's probably my favorite of his just because it's Shawshank. I mean, how can you not love Shawshank? It's just classic. I have a few collections of Neil Gaiman's short stories. Mm-hmm. They're such a great little, like, snapshot into an author's work. It's almost like you can test drive an author. So when you have an author like Stephen King who writes 1,000-page books, like, every other month, mm-hmm. it can be really intimidating to go to the shelf and be like, oh, these are all huge, and there's 25 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. And then you can just pick up a short story collection, read a few, and be like, oh, I really like his writing. Cool. Now I will try, you know, The Stand or Under the Dome or whatever. And then
Oh, my gosh.
Richard Brodigan.
Trout Fishing in America. Oh, my God, Brian. How do you even know about that?
You can thank my college professor, Michael Jockin, for this. We read Richard Brodigan's short stories in one of our classes. I fell in love with In Watermelon Sugar.
Yes.
I just loved the language of that one.
It is so evocative of an era. When was that book written?
69,
70?
Oh, yeah.
I read that when I was like 12.
67.
60. Yeah, there you go.
And then I grabbed this because I started to realize that fairy tales are like original short stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the Grimm Fairy Tales here, which, again, I got a really nice copy of in college. And I'd never really thought about children's books as short stories because they're children's books. But if you think about it, we learn to read short stories.
Yep.
And there are a lot of children's collections.
And then there are people like Charles Perrault who wrote Cinderella, for example.
Yep.
Who was writing for the French court.
Yes.
Because people loved those stories.
Yep.
And then there's someone like Hans Christian Andersen,
mm-hmm.
who adults and children
mm-hmm.
read. And they wind up feeling, in a way, like they're folk tales, you know? Like, you feel like they're so
timeless.
They've
been
forever. It's hard to believe that someone actually sat down and wrote them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, these stories are, you know, they've been passed down for centuries. And it's like, oh, no, like, we know who wrote them. We know the authors.
Like,
and
Aesop's Fables. Like, that's,
right.
you know.
I find with short stories, and I said this when we started talking about the idea of this, I was like, oh, I don't like short stories. And it comes from having gone to getting a MFA in fiction writing, and you're made to read a lot of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I never really wrote them. I was always working on novels. But they stab you in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
They are designed to, like, brain you, to just crush you. And I felt like, and these are literary short stories
sure.
I'm talking about, you know, as opposed to horror and science fiction, which I've always loved.
Mm-hmm.
I can read those all day long. But literary short fiction can be amazing and beautiful, but oh man, it is hard on your soul.
Mm.
So I was really glad when we all sat down and I was like, oh, Kelso has science fiction
mm-hmm.
and Ryan has horror, because that I can read. The other kind I have to take in really small doses because they're difficult. One I wanted to talk about was A People's Future of the United States, edited by one of my favorite horror writers, Victor Lavalle, who wrote The Changeling, and John Joseph Adams, who I'm not familiar with, but they commissioned stories from 25 different writers of all kinds of races and ethnicities, and they asked them to write about an American future. And so this book has some really excellent short stories told from the points of view of this whole mosaic of Americans.
Yeah.
So this is highly recommended. People's Future of the United States, edited by Victor Lavalle and John Joseph Adams.
Cool. That sounds really good. I do love an anthology. Theme and then a bunch of different authors and all writing about that theme. I love an anthology.
If you want to take a good look at the history of short stories, there is the Best Short Stories series.
Oh, yeah, like the Best
one,
American.
And there's Best American Short Stories, and they did one that was the Best American Short Stories of the whole century.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
So they start in 1900, and they go up to 2000, and it's a really interesting way to see how things change. And one person I will also recommend is the short stories of Flannery O'Connor.
Yes.
Mm. Has written some of the most amazing short stories ever. A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
It's my favorite.
Read that story. That is one that you start out laughing and you end up
crying
with the hair rising on the back.
Yeah.
And Joyce Carol Oates also has written some amazing short stories, and she wrote one called Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? Do you know that one? It was made into a movie with Laura Dern.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About the creepy guy and the teenage girl who's home alone.
That was my first introduction to Joyce Carol Oates.
It's funny. I just remember we're talking about anthologies and stuff, and I just remembered that one of my favorite authors, Rainbow Rowell, has written a couple of short stories for some different anthologies, and she wrote this teeny little short story about the opening night for, like, the new Star Wars movie, and the whole thing takes place in line. These kids are in line.
Kindred Spirits.
To go see. Oh, yeah. Yep, it's called Kindred Spirits. To go see the movie. And they're like there for the midnight premiere and they're all outside. And a couple of them start to like fall for each other while they're in line for Star Wars. And it's so cute and wholesome and relatable. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cute. And she's got another one called Midnights. And you get a snapshot of a couple of characters on New Year's Eve, and it goes through like a few New Year's Eves, and you kind of follow their relationship, friendship throughout the years, always at the same time on New Year's Eve. And it's so cute. But talk about like a stab in the heart.
Yeah.
Like so quick, you're getting like a few minutes years apart, and you're just like, wait, what happened that now you're not talking to each other?
No.
Or what happened that you're, you know? Yeah, man, I'm like still remembering all these short stories that I love.
Well, you know, when you had recommended Rainbow to me, I was like, I don't know, but then you told me about her short story. So usually what I do is when somebody recommends me a new author, an author I'm not really sure about, I try to see if they've written any short stories. And then that's, like you said, Ryan.
Yeah, it's like test driving.
Yes, that is test driving an author. If you didn't like it, it didn't feel like you wasted your time reading like a 300-page novel. You know, it's like afternoon. It's okay, whatever. So I understand it. By the way, I love Rainbow, and I started reading Fangirl, and it was so... I'm starting to fall in love with her, and I can't handle it.
The sequel to Carry On comes out
very
soon.
So the two ones that I have here in front of me are pretty beat up because I've had them since like 2005. The first one I want to talk about is The Stories of Brees DJ Pancake. Brees wrote a bunch of short stories about these kind of snapshots in time out of the Southern Appalachia region where he grew up. And they are very masculine. They are, one of the stories is about his father trying to go hunt for troll bites, which is a fictional creature that he tries to find when he's a kid. And his father ends up dying in the short story. And it's just kind of like this snapshot in time of like what it's like to grow up as a man in Southern Appalachia. And a lot of these stories are very heartbreaking. But the way this fell into my hands is one of my friends back in college used to buy 5 copies of the short story at a time and just hand them out to people. Brees was a person who wrote a bunch of short stories. He went into the military, and then he started teaching English literature in a military college, and then he took his own life in 1979 at the age of 26. But he had left all of these stories for a really long time. People thought these were true stories. After this was published back in the 80s, it turned out that they were just stories. And I remember my friend pressing this into my hands, like, you will love this. You should read these. It's rural. It's powerful. It's just such a great set of short stories. And I have purchased, I don't know how many copies, and pressed this into the hands of people and left them in so many little free libraries. So that's the first one. The second short story collection I have is by a man named Edgar Carret, who is a man from Tel Aviv. This short story collection is called The Bus Driver Who Wanted to Be God and Other Stories. They were all originally written in Hebrew back in 2004, and they have been translated since then. I don't even know how to explain these stories. They are really short, quick, warped, strange stories. One of the stories that is in here, called The Flying Santinis, is about a child who goes and sees trapeze artists at the circus, and he asked his father, he really wants to be a trapeze artist. So he goes to the Flying Santinis, and they said, if you can bend over and touch your toes without bending your knees, you can be a Flying Santini. So this little kid bends over, and he almost gets there, and he finally touches his toes, but he breaks his back.
Oh my god.
At the end of this short story. And then he is carried off to the emergency room, and the Flying Santini is crying and whispers to him, you could have bent your knees. You could have bent your knees. They're just really strange short stories. My favorite one is called Neller's Happy Campers, which was actually turned into a movie. Neller's Happy Campers is about a man who commits suicide, and then he goes to the afterworld. This is kind of like a limbo where everybody who has committed suicide goes. All of the furniture is just a little bit too small. He works in this really awful pizza place. There is no color in this world. His clothes don't fit very well. So a mysterious woman comes in. He starts to fall in love with this mysterious woman. And then they try to go to find a way out of the afterworld and to see what's on the other side. So it's just this really wonderful short story. It's like 20 pages long. It's beautiful. I loved that. So I read a lot of like weird fiction.
I love it.
I find a lot of new authors in anthologies. And one of the things that I really like to read are science fiction anthologies. This one that I bought last year, and I keep coming back to it, is Sisters of the Revolution, a feminist speculative fiction anthology, edited by Anne and Jeff Vandermeer. You might know Jeff Vandermeer from the Southern Reach trilogy, the Annihilation series. Last year we did
doing the 100 best horror stories.
Yeah. And the James Tiptree Jr. short story.
James Tiptree Jr. was actually a woman.
Yes.
Named
Alice Bradley Sheldon. And I wanted to read The Screwfly Solution because there was that review in NPR that said this is one of the scariest short stories we've ever read. I'm like, why is that? It's all about femicide. Women, all of a sudden, men start killing women. And nobody understands why men are starting to kill women. And there are these different thoughts about it. And then at the end, I don't want to spoil the ending for you, but yeah, and that was written in like 1977. During the feminist revolution.
It was at a time where it was very hard for women to get published in science fiction.
Yes.
And it was a great interview with N.K. Jemisin where she was talking about how when she began trying to publish her science fiction, and she has a great collection, When Will It Be Black? Future Month that came out this year, that she kept being told, yeah, well, you know, we don't need any more voices like yours because they're kind of, there's already some black science fiction writers, you know, like Octavia Butler, who's been dead a long time.
Right.
And she talks about how hard it was to bash her head against a wall to get through it. But it's one of the great things about science fiction is women and women of color are finally breaking through. Mm-hmm. And this collection, Sisters of the Revolution, has how many different women authors? It's like 20?
There's 25.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women authors in here that I've never heard of. And they write so, so well. The Mothers of Shark Island is really good, too. It is about women who are imprisoned on this island, and nobody explains why they have been imprisoned on this island, and this woman is trying to escape to try to go back to her family.
Who wrote that one?
That one was Kate Reed, is a new voice in the genre.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I love short stories because they're just ways to find new authors and emerging authors, people you wouldn't normally pick up and read, and you get a taste of, like, what other people are like and what other people would enjoy.
Yeah.
I do have to mention one more short story. Ray Bradbury wrote The Illustrated Man, which is a compendium of short stories. One of my favorite ones was Velt, which is a smart house that kills people.
Yes.
Anybody who really likes Black Mirror, I always recommend Illustrated Man. Mm. I've always really liked this idea of technology that's out to kill us or out to get us. Mm-hmm. And what more than like a smart house trying to kill somebody? So
I am here for that. Did you ever watch Smart House on Disney Channel?
Heck yeah, I did.
Oh my God. It's like my favorite movie when I was a kid. I wanted that house, even though she kind of tries to kill them at the end.
Right.
I still wanted that house.
So good. So, Illustrated Man by Ray Bradbury. Such a classic, classic science fiction book. Yeah. One of my favorites. One of my husband's favorites.
Awesome.
So. I'm going to throw out one more, too.
Go ahead.
I just can't help it because you mentioned Ray Bradbury, which is Cord Wainer Smith. Science fiction very often based upon Chinese mythology because he had been somebody in the ambassadorial staff to China before Mao.
Yep.
And then there's some that are based on like the Joan of Arc story. One of my favorite stories of all time is a story called The Lady Who Sailed the Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Try to find The Lady Who Sailed the Soul, one of the great romances of all time. I will say no more. Yep. I just wanted to very quickly announced that we did pick our new book club books, and September 9th we do our first book at 5:30. It's Quiet by Susan Cain.
Awesome. So let's see, let's talk about some other coming events. We've got a bunch. The day this podcast comes out, tonight, Richard Russo is in the store.
Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
Wednesday, September 11th, Madeline Fitch will be presenting her novel Stay and Fight. And then the very next day, September 12th, Leah Plunkett will be discussing her book Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online, which should be a very interesting event. So that's just a few of our many, many coming events. You can see all of our upcoming events on our website, gibsonsbookstore.com. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website, one more time, is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books we talked about today. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye!
Bye.